Welcome to the Dell Golf Podcast.
My name is David Adele, and let's sit down at the workbench and talk about how we can play our best golf. Welcome to the Dell Podcast. Today's guest is a special treat, one of my best friends and mentors. Love this guy to death. He is arguably, in my opinion, the smartest and most giving golf instructor in the game. He's probably taught more golf lessons than any man alive. He's mentored more top 100 instructors, shared his knowledge to make the game better. He has played on the PGA Tour, some of his accolades, inducted into the Golf Hall of Fame as an instructor, has authored more than 20 books and countless covers and articles in golf magazines. He truly is a gem and love the guy to death. Today's guest is famed instructor Mike Adams. Welcome, Mike.
David, it's good to be here.
Glad to have you. It's been, you're obviously one of the most influential people in my life, and I've taken great joy in knowing you over the years, and your entourage of friends and instructors that have enlightened my life, and let's get going here. I'm tickled to death to talk to you. So, Mike, tell us about the ultimate golf lesson.
Well, basically, we did it last year, the first one. Terry Rolls and I, Terry is a phenomenal teacher, one of my best friends also. We did a what we've been working on research, and we had our biomechanists come on. We had Sasha McKenzie and Scott Lynn, Phil Cheatham, Mike Duffy, and JP Fernandez all come on and talk about what they've been researching for us. And we wanted people to understand that what we teach is backed by science. It's not what I think is happening or Terry thinks is happening or we guess it's happening. It's actually what is happening. And we've wanted to make sure that everything had science to back it up so that we weren't just spewing from our lips in garbage.
Right. So your revolutionary book many years back, The Laws, was the beginning and the evolution of what has evolved into bioswing dynamics. What started you down this path of thinking?
It's funny because it all started, first of all, my wife got hurt in Vail skiing, and we went to, and Dr. Stedman did the surgery on her. Dr. Stedman had a biomechanist who was the biomechanist for the U.S. Olympic team, Dr. Chuck Dillman. Chuck Dillman and I became friends, and we started working on projects together. From there, I met another biomechanist by the name of Dr. Jim Sudmeyer. Dr. Jim and I went out, and we filmed at 1,000 frames per second using the 3D motion capture and the Kistler force plates, but almost 200 players. There we created different models, and what we came out with was body types. And that's where the leverage arc and width, they were basically ectomorph, endomorph, and mesomorph. And we saw that was what really determined how people swung the golf club. It had some determination, but it wasn't the end all. And so I was then brought it and showed it to TJ Tomasi and Jim Studdy. And the three of us began working on some revolutionary things. But the problem with the laws is it didn't answer every question. There were too many outliers and things in between. So I began to develop a testing system to measure students to find out what they could or could not do. And Dillman helped me understand that more, and as did a guy by the name of Dr. Ned Armstrong, who's an orthopedic surgeon. And he and I worked together, and we began to create a model. Well, that evolved later into more, and I end up, you know, doing stuff with a guy by the name of E.A. Tischler. I got a phone call from Jim Studdy telling me that there was a guy out in California who was stealing off my information. So I flew out to meet with him, and I sat down and talked to E.A., and E.A. had come up with pretty much a lot of the same stuff that I had, and he had been working with a biomechanist by the name of Gideon Ariel. We combined our stuff and continued to work on things. That's when Terry Rolls and I got together and we started doing stuff too. And we went and we took everything that we had and were working with and turned it over to the different biomechanists and asked them to test it out and see what was correct or incorrect. And we continued doing more research. Well, the first ultimate golf lesson was based on all of that stuff. The second one is all the stuff that we've learned in this last year. It's a kind of a continuation of the first. It's been pretty amazing stuff. I've basically been very fortunate. I was one of the first people to use force plates, first people to use video, one of the first people to use launch monitors, and one of the first people to use 3D. And from that, I became much smarter. We believe that it is better to test than to guess. So we test everybody.
So the term biomechanics sounds very scientific and complicated. And maybe, you know, for the average golfer might be put them off to think, oh, you know, biomechanics and golf seem like a really complicated scenario. What is biomechanics in your mindset and why does it matter in today's modern instruction?
Well, it's basically the study of human movement and how people move in time and space. And we wanted to find out, it took, we did a lot of measuring and stuff, figure out different things. We learned how the right hand has a huge difference in how they hold the club, which also has a huge difference in how they use the ground. We learned that there was basically three ground reaction forces, glide, lateral, or then there's rotation or spin or torque, and then there was vertical. And every golfer utilized all three. They used them in different magnitudes, and they were dominant in one, maybe two over the others.
Right.
And so we developed a testing system to make it work.
So you've developed this amazing screening process. And, interesting thing is Mike and I have kind of the same background. Early on, Mike's father was one of the very first golf machine instructors working with Homer Kelly when he was the head pro at Broadmoor. And my mentor, Ben Doyle, was also at Broadmoor and worked with Homer and was one of the first authorized golf machine instructors.
And he was the first.
Yeah, he was. And the interesting thing about the golfing machine is it's a book that classifies and categorizes, different components of every aspect of the golf swing. You know, Homer died too soon for us to have maybe got more information of how to apply it. And so basically we had this book of how to categorize and understand scientifically what was going on, but no way to effectively apply it to somebody. You know, having 24 components and 3 to 11 variations, but nowhere in it does it really say how to do it. And it just explains, and it's been the foundation of so many golf instructors' knowledge base. But what Mike and Terry and EA have created over their careers is how to apply what each person needs. And so you've developed this screening process. Can you tell me what are the screens that you guys look at?
There are basically 6 screens. Okay, we measure wingspan versus height. That's going to help us understand posture and ramifications of how posture affects what we do in time and space. We measure from middle knuckle to elbow and then from the elbow to the shoulder socket. We want to find the relationship between the forearm and the upper arm, whether it's longer, the same, or shorter, which also affects how the club comes down and how the body works. We measure the right hand grip. We do a test and have them swing their hands back and see how the right hand orients itself, whether it's going to be under, side on or on top, or between side on and under, side under, between side on and on top, side cover. We also test about, how much external shoulder rotation they have, how that affects what's happening in the downswing. We check the lower body, whether they're front, center, or rear post. And about a third of the players pivot back and through around the front leg. You know, Bryson DeChambeau is a great example, as is Cameron Champ,
Ben Hogan's, Tigers.
Yeah. Then you look at the rear post guys who pivot back around the right hip and through around the left hip. They're going to use a lot more lateral. Then you have the center post who pivot back around the pelvis and through around the front leg. They're always working through around the front leg, but they're using different things in their backswing, which affects how they use the ground differently. We test what their rotation, their pelvis rotation is, so we can test how strong to make the left hand. And you and I have come up with a testing device for the grip, and it works miracles. So they understand what the left-hand grip needs to be to deliver a square club face.
Yeah. And then you got toe flares.
Right.
Yeah. Foot
flare.
Stance.
You have stance width. You have orientation, closed, square, or open. You have, there's a lot of different variations. Things you do differently for a lefty playing righty or righty playing lefty.
So these screens enable you to have a kind of a pattern of how a person's going to swing, regardless of what they tell you they're doing or what they come to you with. It predetermines the direction that you're going to move towards.
It gives me a blueprint.
Yeah,
it
gives you a blueprint of how their body works. For example, like the screen for span will tell you, you know, how tall or bent over someone will be. Like Matt Kuchar's span to height is shorter than his overall height, his span. So he bends over more, and that's going to change the takeaway. And, you know, conversely with like a player like Jim Furyk, where his span is greater than his height, he's going to take the club in a different slot. So slotting is very, very important. It's one of the big things that comes out of these screens is the slots that someone should play in, correct?
Well, the amazing thing is it tells us what their backswing plane is, how they're going to set the club, where the club is at the top, how they're going to bring the club down, what the downswing plane is, what the linkage, where the right elbow is relative to the right hip, what their hips are going to be at impact, how they're going to use the ground, what the release type is. It just gives us everything. So, you know, there's no guessing.
Yeah, if you're not measuring, you're winging it, aren't you? So what are some of the screens that someone can do on their own that would give them a little more understanding about how to approach their own game?
Well, get into their golf posture, place their hands together at the right hand, or the right hand slightly lower, and swing their arms to the right, allowing the right arm to fold, and just kind of stabilizing the shoulders, and see where the right palm is. What the elbow does and what the palm does is going to dictate how they place the hands on their right hand on the golf club. And place a club across the top of their thighs and simply pivot back. They're going to see if they're going to pivot on the right hip, the front hip, or we're going to pivot more around the center. Those are probably the two most important things they can check. Wingspan versus height, forearm versus upper arm. If they understand that, they're going to understand their backswing and downswing planes. Basically, those are things they can do on their own.
So what does a longer lower arm versus the upper arm, what will that tell you?
Well, it'll bring the club down steeper.
Okay, so that'll dictate the downward slot.
Plus, it's going to have a higher position at the top of the backswing.
Correct. And so span to height will do what?
It'll give you your posture. It'll give you what your backswing plane is going to be.
So where would somebody, what would be a way to find the correct posture?
Go down and touch the top of your knees.
Okay.
Creating a little bit of knee flex until you get into a balanced athletic posture. If you dropped a plumb line down from the top of your spine, the tip of your elbow, the tip of the knee, and balls of the feet should be in alignment.
Okay. And so that's what that little touching the top of your kneecap essentially gets everybody in a biomechanically correct posture.
It stacks all the load-bearing joints.
Okay. And then so the span to height, by dictating the span to height, will dictate the posture, which will dictate your takeaway, correct?
Correct. Yeah. See, if I have longer arms, my posture becomes more erect. When my posture becomes more erect, my shoulders will turn flatter, so my arms will swing more upright to create an angle to the golf ball. If I have shorter arms and height, I have more bent over and more knee flex, which presets vertical action in the ground and also gets my shoulders turning a little steeper.
So example of that would be shorter span to height would be like a Matt Kuchar where he's bent over more because his span to height is shorter in his span. So that takes his backswing flatter, right? What we would deem flatter. I mean,
it is going to be flatter because of that.
Yeah. And then he's going to slot based on his arm length differentials.
Right, which brings it down a little bit higher into more of a torso plane.
Yeah, where a Dustin Johnson, whose span is, what, 4 inches longer than his height. So he's going to stand more vertical, and he's going to take the club more vertical in the takeaway. And his arm span is equal arm length, right, from knuckle to elbow to the shoulder.
Plus he's under.
And he's under, so he slots around the torso. So
right. See, what happens is that what we have to understand is that the right hand grip has a lot to do with what happens in the backswing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not just wingspan. It's also right hand grip. Example would be Matthew Wolf, very much on top. Mm-hmm. Because he's on top, he's going to hinge the club more up into the outside and take it in. The club goes out. He's got a ton of external shoulder rotation. So he'll drop the club in on the way down, and being on top, he still comes down steeper. Sergio, he's got wingspan to height the same, okay? But his forearm is shorter than his upper arm, which causes him to drop it down under in the downswing. Plus, he's got a ton of external rotation, which causes him to lower his play in the downswing. But he's on top, so he stays on top of it the whole time and uses a ton of verticals. So he's a spinner launcher when he hits it. I mean, you just go, there isn't anybody on tour who, there's no outliers. All there is people, we measure it and we can match them to how they should swing.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, with the methodology teaching, people get jammed into the wrong box most often. And the ones that have success or a teacher has success with matches kind of their methodology. And then there's all these outliers that never fit into their model and they get pretty jammed up. It's frustrating to see that, you know, all these people out there working so hard to improve their games and getting flawed information that's not pertinent to them. And you've kind of, well, you have cracked the code on what people need.
Think of Hunter Mahan, okay?
Yeah.
Here's a guy who's a front post golfer. When Sean Foley was teaching more of a stack and tilt type system, Hunter Mahan was a top 10 player in the world. When he shifted and started teaching more of a center post, Justin Rose flourished and Tiger flourished, but Hunter Mahan struggled and has never been the same. Lydia Ko, rear post under golfer. She would shift to the right, drop an under, and hit it beautiful. Number one player in the world. Won a ton. Then she switched teachers who made her grip more neutral and got her staying more centered. And as a result, her clubhead speed dropped from 94 to 83, and she's never won again. She has since returned trying her grip stronger and being rear post, but so she'll start to play better. A good example, Yanni Singh. Gary Gilchrist had her on the front post with an under grip. She won 18 times. She won 6 majors, and all before she was 22 years old. And at 107 mile an hour clubhead speed, was the best player in the world. She left Gary, went teaching somebody else who neutralized her grip, got her more center post instead of front. And all of a sudden, she's never won again. In fact, she's lost her card and her clubhead speed to pedestrian 94 miles an hour. So, I mean, there are so many cases of this. It's unbelievable.
I watched a golf lesson with Mike a while back. It was a lady. She was about 60 years old, about a 7 handicap, was hitting a low snap hook, and had her clubhead speed at around 80 miles an hour with a driver. And within, you know, 15, 20 minutes, Mike had her hitting it amazingly high and got her clubhead speed up to 94 miles an hour, which is, you know, LPGA Tour average. How does that happen? What are you doing in that kind of a scenario to create these kind of performance outputs that you're getting when, you know, I see you bump someone's mile per hour clubhead speed, you know, generally on average from 7 to 10 or 12 miles an hour in a very short period of time. What's going on in that scenario?
Well, my good friend Chris Connell has accused me of having magic dust, which I sprinkle on their head, which makes them speed up and hit the ball a lot farther and a lot straighter. But in reality, it's fundamentals. When we analyze them, we're able to depict what they're basically, they have some holes in their swing. I mean, they're power leaks. And you can, and if you get close enough, you can hear them. They go, because the power is seeping out of them. And from those power leaks, we plug the leaks. And we begin to make them, help them to use the ground more efficiently. It's funny because path, plane, face angle, face to path, spin axis, and where in the club face it hits, and smash factor all change once we start making the changes. Understanding who they are and how they move in time and space helps us to do that.
Yeah, and this lady had, she came in with a strong grip to her fold. She was, I think, side cover. And you got her grip on top, which now allowed her to start releasing the golf club and utilizing her right arm and moving her arms faster without the face wrapping around. And you got her verticals. I think you squared up her left foot because she had a strong grip and was kind of needed that weaker left toe flare to kind of keep, you know, traveling through it. But she never hit a wall. And it was amazing. It just like one thing after another. And she was like, oh, my God, I can't believe this. You know, what role does the right arm play? You very seldom hear golf instructors talk about the right arm. And Ben Hogan always said, I wish I had 2 right arms. And
three, he said.
No, 3. I mean, Ben notoriously.
Because the right arm is vital. I mean, think of this. If I'm an on top golfer and I'm pushing down, my legs want to push up. If I'm a side on golfer and I'm pushing there, my hips want to open up. If I'm an under golfer and I'm working this way, my hips want to move lateral. I mean, grip, the right hand grip controls how you hinge the golf club. It controls backswing plane. It controls angle of attack. It controls linkage, where the right elbow is relative to the right hip when you come through the golf ball. It controls ground reaction force. It controls what the release type is and just basically your spin numbers on your driver, the shape of the shot you hit, all of them. So it's pretty important to get that right. And it's amazing to me that so many teachers ignore the right and left hand grip, which are not the same. They are different and they do not have to match.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things when Mike worked with me, you know, I was always taught to turn my shoulders to take the club back and got me all jammed up and out of alignment. And, you know, one of the first things that, you know, Mike showed me was your arms travel first until they run out of room. And that immediately took my pull away because I was basically turning my chest. The club was perpendicular to my shoulder line. And when I got to the top, I had to kind of lay it off and shut my body down so the golf club could get back into alignment with my pivot so I could release it. And by then, I'd lost alignment and linkage in the connection. Huge stuff, knowing exactly what you need to be doing. I think that's the big problem people have is they just don't know what to do. They don't know where to start. And the problem is modern golf instruction has evolved a lot, and in large part to Mike. But I mean, why haven't more instructors gone down your path? Why are they so resistant to, oh, I already know that, or oh, this is, I've known that for years. But I see people coming in and they're just so jammed up, and you get them unjammed. Why is this not protocol for the PGA of America almost?
The PGA is afraid to adopt a method, which mine really isn't a method. It's just what we teach, Terry and I, is basically all-inclusive of everything.
Right.
There's no such thing as an outlier anymore. No. That was our goal, is to rid ourselves of outliers. There's only people, and we can explain everything that happened. Mike McTeague, early in my career, had a device called SportsSense, which measured the differentials and stuff. And he and I went and did a bunch of stuff for the PGA and the LPGA tours and got a bunch of facts. And that helped me understand some things. Phil Cheatham is, with what he's done with 3D, has helped us understand who used a certain grip. Terry Rolls, one of the brightest people I've ever met, one of the best instructors I've ever seen. I mean, he's relentless in trying to get to the bottom and make people better. David, you and I have been friends for a long time. We met at MIT. You're the smartest person in golf that I've met. The things that you come up with and develop, which everybody ends up copying and taking credit for it, are incredible. I asked you to do something and you created. We wanted a swing design which will help the swing better. I drew it on a napkin. The next thing you know, you developed the Groover. I asked for a way to measure grips. I drew it on a napkin. The next thing you created was the grip analyzer. I mean, the stuff you do is so far ahead of the rest of the world. The industry is afraid of intuition and moving forward. I mean, look what you've done in putter fitting, wedge fitting, and golf clubs. They're afraid of innovation, are they not?
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you think golf instruction is so afraid to dive deeper? It's like, you know, I see a lot of instructors really digging at it. They travel around, they do a lot of seminars, but they're not in general. I'm not saying all of them. I'm just saying there's, you know, we're only as good as our weakest link as instructors, correct?
Right. Because well, think of this, okay? When people all of a sudden start to have success, they're afraid to change to lose the success they've had. I mean, I've won the National Teacher of the Year. I'm ranked number 2 in the world by Golf Digest, and I'm in the World Golf Hall of Fame, okay? I'm nowhere near as good a teacher as I'm going to be next year because I'm going to continue to push myself and make myself smarter and better. My good friend Terry Rolls is the same way. He is constantly trying to be the best he can be, and he constantly is driving me to continue to learn. You, the same thing. You're constantly saying, well, have you thought about this or thought about that? I mean, bouncing things off of smarter people than you is a great way to become smarter because you see things from a different perspective, and all of a sudden you start to see things that you hadn't seen before.
Yeah, one of the things that really bothers me in our business is there's so many repackagers out there. And I call them repackagers because they garner information from others and then they repackage it to sound like they invented it. And there are very few clear thinkers out there that really influence the game, like a Mark Sweeney that, you know, developed Aimpoints, you, what you've developed, you and Terry with what you guys are developing. Very few free thinkers out there that create a change, a fundamental change. You know, when you come up with an idea that it rattles the whole world. And there's so many repackagers out there, and it's frustrating to see your information being repackaged, Terry's, you know, other people out there that have, you know, have made fundamental changes in the game, and others repackage itself as their own. And it's really frustrating. You see it all the time. And I hate to see it. And Mike, you've been more repackaged than anybody, your information and your insight. You've helped so many instructors and you've mentored how many, I mean, you've mentored probably either half or more than half the list of top 100 instructors. And you help so many people become great instructors when most top teachers don't do that. They try to be mystical and have the, like you have the secret sauce and you have to go see them to get the information and they don't like to share it. What is your legacy with that? To me, I think that's one of your greatest legacies, not only of what you've invented and come up in terms of concepts is how many people you disseminate this information to become better instructors.
Well, I mean, knowledge is to be shared. We don't own knowledge. We don't know the own the information. All we can do is share and try to help and move our industry forward. I mean, David, what you and I developed with wedge fitting and wedge grinds and stuff like that, mm-hmm. It revolutionized the wedge industry because everybody started using different shafts. They started creating different bounces and hedge designs and making the club more useful. And I mean, even though we haven't benefited as much from it, but the rest of the industry has. What you're about to come out with new in the with wedges is going to take it another 10 years farther ahead.
Yeah.
Putter fitting. I mean, you revolutionized putter fitting, the single length shafts and how all that stuff. I mean, you basically have revolutionized that. There's so much that you're doing that nobody knows about.
Well, hopefully we'll change that in the future. So tell us about your new book. You have a book coming out.
Yeah, Terry and I have been working on one. And it's basically based on the two ultimate golf lessons. And it's we're going to have the biomechanists in there talking about what the research has shown. And we'll go through all the different, help people understand to help people become better.
So it's going to be a guide, basically.
It's going to be a how-to book. It's going to be the most conclusive golf instruction book ever written.
I have no doubt. I have no doubt.
And it's all science-based, and it's going to be pretty incredible. I mean, anybody who wants to become a better teacher or a better player should be buying the book and tuning into our ultimate golf lesson in February. And those are going to be some pretty amazing things.
Well, I mean, what you and Terry have created is a benchmark for instruction, without a doubt. I don't know how I can do a golf lesson without screening and understanding what I've learned from you guys. It's taken my instruction to a whole nother level, and it's allowed me to think in a totally different way. You know, I think what we do together as a group and friends is we see it three-dimensionally. We just don't see it as a linear scenario. We see how do we connect all these pieces together. So it's a vertically integrated process of instruction, getting the body to work correctly within what a person's able to do, having them understand their body, their limitations, and building this framework that we can understand. And then how do we feed that to that individual in doses that they can understand and work on? It's just brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I mean, you're such an amazing instructor. So you have a special event coming up. You're going to have a webinar, and this is a phenomenal opportunity for anybody listening to get involved. It's not free, but it'll be worth every penny you put into it. Tell us about your webinar that you guys are going to be doing, and when is it?
Well, it's starting in February. I think it's Monday, Tuesday, first and second weeks of February. Terry Rolls and I are hosting it, and we're going to go over what the latest and greatest stuff that we've developed and researched. We're going to have the brilliant minds like Dr. Kwan, Dr. Sasha McKenzie, Dr. Phil Cheatham, and Dr. Mike Duffy, going over what we've asked them to research for us and what they found, and just trying to continue taking the golf instruction world ahead. We're going to have some of the best instructors in the country also who have been utilizing our system and talking about their experiences. We're going to do some live lessons on there, showing people how to do it. It's just going to be an incredible, incredible 4 days.
Yeah, you did one during the early stages of the pandemic, and it was phenomenal. And, this is information that you don't have to be a golf professional to have to go, this is not for just golf professionals. This is for anybody that wants to get on, watch the webinars, and it's going to be so enlightening for you. I can't recommend it more. Like I said, it'll be well. How much is it, Mike?
I think it's $250.
Worth every penny. Probably worth $5,000. The information
that you hit the $5,000.
But it's a way for the general public to actually go and listening to some of the greatest minds in the business and how to disseminate this information for yourself. I can't recommend it enough. You got to do it. It's well worth it. So, Mike, what do you want your legacy to be?
My legacy basically is that I contributed to golf, helping people get better, and I guess that would be my legacy.
Yeah. Well, you've done it. I mean, if you knew how many golf lessons this guy gives, he's on the tee from 9 to 5 every day, 6 days a week.
To prove it.
He's stood in the sun more than anybody can imagine. Mike, is there anything you want to add?
See, the golfing machine has been getting a lot of hammering and bad mouthing. We got to remember, this is a book written in 1969.
Yep.
Homer was an engineer. And basically, he was giving us the geometry of the golf swing. Since then, that was a launching pad for all of us.
Yeah.
It brought us into the new age of understanding how the mechanics of the swing work. I mean, there's a lot of things that were not perfect in the golfing machine that we've since found and developed more. But it was a good start, and it got us to where we are. And like I like to say is, we stand on the shoulders of greatness. I mean, there are so many people that were ahead of us that created what we do in teaching. I mean, I hear people badmouth Butch Harmon, who I think is one of the most brilliant teachers ever, and David Ledbetter, Hank Haney, whether you agree with it or not, Jim Hardy, Jim McClain, Chuck Cook, all these people really contributed and moved the level of instruction up, Randy Smith. And the reason why instruction is where it is because of people like that. Homer Kelly was a huge influencer in golf. And the biomechanists like, Jim Sudmeyer, and also, Gideon Ariel and Chuck Dillman, they gave us better insight. Mike McTeague with his research. I mean, all of that helped us be better at what we're doing. But we need to thank those people. One of the people that I thought was pretty amazing when I was learning how to teach was Ben Doyle, because Ben had a love for the game. He taught it at the Broadmoor where I worked cleaning clubs as a kid. And Ben was on that tee all day, every day. And it didn't matter whether it was, what the weather was like, pouring rain, he's out there. Those guys all love to teach. I'm very fortunate. I get to do something every single day and get paid a lot of money to do something that I would probably do for free, something I love to do. I get excited about going to work every single day. And when I lose that excitement, that's when I will retire.
Yeah. And you do have it. I mean, like you said, Ben Doyle was at his post every day. He would just sit in his golf cart there at the range at Quail Lodge. And he was there all day, 7 days a week. He'd go to church and then he'd be out there in the afternoon. I mean, the guy, he was amazing. That passion he had for teaching is the same passion that you have. And he could never have done it without the love of his wife, and you couldn't have done it without the love of Margie, your wife, supporting you and your family through all the long hours of teaching. She deserves a lot of credit to your success too, because you can't do it without a solid partner behind you. And she's been a huge support to you and every golf instructor out there. By giving you that support, you have that love to give back to all of us. So, Mike, truly love you. I appreciate your friendship, and I look to many years of spending time and fun and having an awesome 100-point glass of wine.
Sounds good to me, Dad.
All right, buddy. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Adele Golf Podcast. Make sure you stay tuned for more podcasts coming your way on a regular basis. Subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're interested in going through a fitting process and finding the best putter for you, head over to adelegolf.com. Go to the Find a Fitter tab, scroll down, and find a fitter in your state nearby. Find a putter that you know is custom fit for your best performance. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.